Welcome back to the Pot of Greed.
It's right, another week of Yu-Gi-Oh! And games and other stuff. We've got a lot to go into. Updates on stuff from the past week, Yu-Gi-Oh! Announcements. One's in chat, by the way, if you are watching the YouTube
Premiere Gang.
Live. Love to have you. Happy Thursday. So, I guess we'll kick this off with a quick review of ours.
All right, what we got?
Yeah, this person says...
Wait, where's it from?
This is another Apple review. I realize I can't find them on Spotify. Oh, okay. So. This is from Jay Vicious. I've been watching the main APS channel for years. I don't play paper Yu-Gi-Oh!, but I play Duel Links and watch you guys all the time. All of you have chemistry together that isn't matched by any group I've ever seen. Keep up the great work. Love the podcast, but my main question for you is, Pot of Greed, what does it do? Happy dueling, duelists.
I think it holds our questions. It holds our questions.
I was going to say that we draw two from it, but technically we draw four.
I don't know what this thing does, to be honest with you.
So it's still a little ambiguous as to what it does. You guys, of course, can let us know down in the comments or the live chat what exactly the Pot of Greed does.
All I know is every time we put our hands in, we get more cards.
It varies. There are a lot of cards in there. Thank you for the review, though. We appreciate it. You gave us 5 stars. If you guys listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else, then high ratings are certainly great. Any ratings are great, but high ratings are even better. Anywho, So, Yu-Gi-Oh! This week is, I wouldn't call it a slow week, because there have been some announcements.
But no blockbuster announcements.
Yeah, nothing crazy. The community hasn't, been sort of melting down over some new card announcement or something like that.
They've been melting down in other ways. We're not getting into that.
Yeah, there's always something to melt down over, but in terms of, official news, I think the biggest announcement that just came out yesterday when you guys are listening to this is that Yu-Gi-Oh! Worlds is going to be in the United States this year.
In Seattle, Washington.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
This is the first time, I think, that we've had a Worlds in the United States since 2016.
Ooh, that pandemic took years off us.
Yeah, 2016, I believe. So,
And that's glad it's in Seattle. I remember the last time we thought we were going to have a Worlds in the U.S. Where was it? Wisconsin?
It was, I thought it was like Detroit, Michigan, or somewhere.
Somewhere I didn't want to go.
It was when COVID happened. Yeah. And then the Worlds got canceled. So Konami Digital Entertainment has announced that the Yu-Gi-Oh! World Championship is coming to the USA for the first time since 2016. The prestigious World Championship will bring challengers from across the globe to Seattle, Washington on September 7th and 8th, which is a little bit later than Worlds typically is. Mm. Typically, Worlds is that weekend of August, that first weekend of August. I would know. I've been to the last couple of them, as it happens.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to be invited to this one.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know if they'll need to invite me.
But I might pass through. I was born out there.
Seattle?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I guess maybe technically Tacoma, but Washington State, that's my birth state.
The Yu-Gi-Oh! World Championship 2024 will feature separate tournaments in 4 categories for the first time ever. They include tournaments for the Yu-Gi-Oh! Trading Card Game, Yu-Gi-Oh! Master Duel, and 2 different formats for Duel Links. Mm-hmm. One Duel Links format will be the Speed Duel, as per previous WCS events, and the additional format will be for the Rush Duel format. So, they've also confirmed details on the World Championship qualifier tournaments for the TCG in America, Europe, and Oceania.
Mm-hmm.
So, we know that Central America's WCQ date is June 21st to 23rd in Mexico City, Mexico. Oceania's June 28th to 30th in Auckland, New Zealand. South America is that same weekend in Lima, Peru. North America is July 19th to 21st in Austin, Texas. A little closer to us, we might be able to go to that. And the Europe one is the 26th to the 28th of July in Berlin, Germany.
We should go to that one.
Let's go to that one specifically. Yeah, better than Texas.
I've been to Texas before.
Yeah, that's true. Texas isn't anything.
I guess technically I've been to Berlin before, but I want to go again.
Okay, so this is cool news. Obviously, Yu-Gi-Oh! World is always a pretty fun time, but it's not really something that I think most people in the West have really even gotten to attend.
No, I mean, if the last Worlds was in 2016, at least in the United States, there's a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh! Players that only had just gotten into Yu-Gi-Oh! In 2016. Yu-Gi-Oh! Has changed a lot, and
it has.
They haven't had a chance to go to a World, so I think this is really cool for a lot of reasons, honestly.
Okay, so... what do you think about these double Duel Links things? They're doing Speed Duel Duel Links and Rush Duel Duel Links.
I think it shows some It shows that they are committed to rush dual links. I think it also, to me, it also means that we will never see the physical rush dual game in the West.
Why do you say that? You just feel like because they're...
Because had this is they,
like cementing.
Yeah, like had they ignored the fact that rush dual was in dual links, then I feel that, you know, maybe there's always a chance that we'll get the physical game at some point. Mm-hmm. But they went ahead and added a part for it in our world championship. That's like saying this is here forever. And that has to be signed. I mean, it has to be signed off on by like the TCG and the OCG. So I think that's just that.
Yeah, that's kind of suck because, I mean, I know a lot of people do want that physical rush duel thing. But I feel like they just have found that it's not maybe financially feasible to bring it over. It does seem a little weird to me, too, because, like, Duel Links is the smallest audience of these three games. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of crazy. Not crazy in, like, a bad way, but, like, it seems a little hard to believe that they would want to even commit to, like, doing two separate Duel Links tournaments. Because it's, like, are they going to reduce the amount of people that they bring for each? Otherwise, that's, like, even more players that kind of qualify and get flown out. And
Maybe you reduce, but I don't think they will.
Maybe not.
It'll probably be about the same. It'll be it's a larger event in general. Mm-hmm. I really hope by the time that rolls around, our Rush Duel format is a little bit more interesting. Well, I mean, right now it's okay, but I would hope to. I'd like to see some more developments.
Like, what do you mean?
So, you know, we're still kind of in this caveman Rush Duel era of Yu-Gi-Oh, where it's a very, very simple game. It's not all that fun to watch. If I'm being completely honest,
it can be a little like, yeah, caveman kind of just stronger monster wins.
With our latest release with Maximum Summons and stuff, and with the mechanics that we're using right now, it's more interesting than it was only a few weeks ago. But if we're gonna put Rush Duel on the world stage for all of the West to see,
it needs to be a little more exciting.
Yeah, I really would like to see it more exciting.
Yeah, this is, I mean, I think, like, I will be interested in seeing how Rush Duel, that kind of Road to Worlds sort of campaign that they always mm-hmm. do, like, how that goes. Will there be a lot of people playing that? Will getting a trip to, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh! Worlds be an easy acquisition if you just go through Rush Duel? Because, like, maybe not a lot of people will be playing it.
I mean, that's possible. And then that's another interesting part. That means Duel Links will have two Road to Worlds events, allegedly.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I don't even know. They don't say here how many people are getting invited to this. Like, I mean, typically that you'll, I guess, know closer to time, like exactly how many people will qualify in TCG, Master Duel, Duel Links per, you know, country and or territory. So I guess we'll get some more of those details a little bit later, but...
And they might even do it the same way it worked in the with Worlds in Japan. And a lot of you guys don't know, but during the last Worlds, the Japanese held a Rush Duel World final, like a world, like, or it wasn't really a world final, but they had a Rush Duel tournament during Worlds weekend last year. Yeah,
it was in like the same venue, just next door,
and in the very next room over. And so, there's even a chance that they will air the Rush Duel World Championship maybe the day before or hours before we get to the kind of meat of the event. Maybe like think of it as like a preliminary.
Yeah, I always thought it would be really cool, and I think Duel Links had this, but maybe Master Duel didn't, or maybe someone can correct me if they both did, and I just don't know. Is the ability to watch the world finals like from your Master Duel account? From the spectate. Did they do that in Duel Links?
Since we've been at the last couple worlds.
Yeah, I haven't known. Yeah, I never had my phone out during the time. I guess I've been like sitting and looking at the stage, but like I always think that sort of thing is cool. Like,
you know you what?
Just tune in and watch it.
I think they could because I remember you could see the like the watch
count.
See like in during the Master Duel final. I remember we could see some type of number that might have said how many people were spectating.
Yeah. Okay.
How you get the room? How do you find the room? I don't know.
So either way, yeah. I mean, the world season it's kicking off. Like, get to your regionals, get your invites so you can get to. Play in nationals and then
OTS is just went around. Worlds.
Yeah, they did. Tro won an OTS in somewhere in Mississippi at a card shop. He won that, so that was pretty cool. Shout outs to him. I didn't even know like OTS things were happening this past weekend. I was kind of preoccupied. Boy,
checked out.
Yeah, well, that's really cool. That's all for that. Now they also have announced The next mainline set, The Infinite Forbidden.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, so this is the one that's got Exodia, or it's kind of Retrain, on it. Here's what they have to say. Return to where it all began with a new strategy featuring the unstoppable Exodia. Exodia, obliterate. The two words that cemented Yu-Gi-Oh! As a global sensation.
It did.
So, yeah, by revealing all five pieces of Exodia from your hand or deck, or having them on the field, you'll be able to summon a brand new Exodia fusion monster. It can't be destroyed by card effects and can add your current life points to its attack points every turn, and the boost never wears off. So if your opponent somehow manages to survive Exodia's onslaught, they'll just face a strong Exodia the turn after that. And through its mastery of ancient powers, it can also cancel one spell or trap activation of your choice every turn for free, and it fetches an Exodia-themed spell or trap from your deck each turn for you to use, also for free. So, yeah, some cool stuff. They're going to be continuing, I think, the Yugi, like, kind of Shining Sarcophagus stuff, I think, in the set. Gets a few more cards.
Yeah, we get a few more there. I think it's the, I forgot which ones it was now. I'm blank. Oh, there's a Dark Magician in that set, right?
Yeah, there is
a version of a Dark Magician,
I think. So, yeah, 100 new cards. We're continuing the fun, they say, of the 25th anniversary celebration by including 25 quarter-century secret rares, including one special card. Now, the special card, I think, hasn't been revealed yet, but I know that it won't be Bonds of Time and Unity Magician or whatever, because that was supposed to only be for four sets. Okay. So they might be introducing a new thing that will be...
Well, if Magician of the Bonds of, like, Time and Unity, they're kind of Dark Magician-themed. If I had to guess, then these will be the... Something about, like, Blue Eyes or Dragons, and it's not going to be Unity, it's going to be Pride.
Okay.
You know why I think that?
Why do you think that?
Because of the OCG set that we opened.
Yeah, the Side Unity.
And then the next one is Side Pride. So.
Okay, maybe it could be like that.
Now, I don't know what's up with Unity and Pride. Like, why are those the keywords right now? But
well, I guess in the OCG, it kind of... Unity is probably what the main characters would be focused on. Like, you know...
Oh, and Pride friends. Is like more and the Pride's rivals. Like
the rivals have more pride, so.
So I'm thinking like Dragon or Blue Eyes themed in some way.
All right, I'll cut the pretense and say I'm really tired of quarter century secret rares.
Me too.
I was hoping that I was wondering what we would do when the first like kind of four sets were done, because that would be a year. But since it seems like this 25th anniversary isn't ending anytime soon, we get to stick with these quarter century secret rares. I'm just a QCR hater.
I am.
But I don't think that the rarity is all that great. It looks just a lot like Starlights that are harder to read to me. And
I don't care what they look like. I don't have an opinion on the look of the cards. I just look at what QCRs I've pulled and I'm mad.
Oh yeah, they've never been very valuable.
I pulled the Tistina Boss Monster and I pulled the Snake Eye Field Spell.
And I pulled that one machine from Phantom Nightmare. The like
oh yeah
starts with a G or something.
That the thing.
It doesn't really have a great effect. I think this is probably just a few too many QCRs.
There's just too many in a set. That's my only thing against them. There's too many of them and they're not all impactful. They're not all in, like, the special monster.
Now, maybe I should, you know, like, just shut up and quit complaining, right? Like, it's not like the QCRs hurt me. But Yeah, that's right. They hurt
every time. That Tistina Boss Monster just floored me.
Oh, no. I'm just being bitter. Don't mind me. Anyway, this is The Infinite Forbidden. It's going to be dropping on July 17th at OTS stores. You can pick it up and get 9 cards per pack for $4.49 per pack. That actually reminds me, I was at Target the other day, and I was looking at the price of individual packs for different card games. I did not know that like a Magic the Gathering pack is like $5.99.
Yeah, they say y'all can afford it.
For the MSRP. That's crazy.
So you're a Magic player. You're used to expensive cardboard.
Yeah. And Pokemon packs are $4.99. So Yu-Gi-Oh! Is actually the cheapest of them.
And that's after Yu-Gi-Oh! Increased its price that we all complained about.
Yeah, Yu-Gi-Oh! Did stay inflation resistant for like the better part of 20 some odd years. So,
or maybe they're just ignoring it.
Yeah, something. I don't know. I guess it would be in character for Yu-Gi-Oh! To kind of ignore what the rest of the industry is doing and just stick to its guns for better and for worse.
Right.
But yeah, I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. Like $5.99 for a pack of Magic cards. And that's like a regular booster. I know those collector's boosters are like $20.
$20, so yeah. That's how it goes. That's how it is. Magic yeah. players now.
Yeah. How much is a Digimon pack? Do you know the MSRP of that?
I only buy boxes. You don't buy. I literally can't remember the last time I bought a Digimon pack. Like a single pack.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, yeah, so that's Infinite Forbidden. And we also got the announcement of an Ultimate Rare in the next OTS pack, which I believe is like OTS 25. They announced that there's going to be an Ultimate Rare Exodia the Forbidden one, which I guess is meant to somewhat align with this Infinite Forbidden set.
I mean, I guess that's fine. I'm just tired of Exodia reprints. I feel like we've had a lot of them. Like,
I think Exodia has been printed in pretty much every rarity. I think an Ultimate Rare Exodia would be cool. It's just that, like, how to put it? So, OTS packs are like, you know, you get them for playing in tournaments. Like, you go to your locals and you play and you get your OTS pack. I think that OTS packs, their charm or their appeal is that they are tournament relevant cards, getting like ultimate upgrades and super upgrades and stuff. So I don't think it's really the place for Exodia, which is just a more kind of anime casual card. I don't think that it really needs to be in an OTS pack. And we also have already had like the Exodia pieces as Starlight Rares. Mm-hmm. That was in like one of the Battles of Legend Armageddon a couple years ago or something like that. One of those Battles of Legend ones, they did Starlight Rare Exodia pieces, and that felt pretty special and neat, and didn't feel like it detracted from the set. Whereas like I would be a little bit bummed if I got an OTS pack and like my ulti was like just Ultimate Rare Exodia head.
And you have to ask yourself, is this rarity bump really going to have value when we have so many like valuable Exodia prints already?
Yeah, it feels like it's like in the same realm as like the Egyptian god cards, where they love to just print those things over and over and over, and
every rarity
sort
they
of
can
vaguely imply to you that like it's the Egyptian gods, but only for the like 17th time, you know, in this cool rarity. But like it doesn't change the fact that the gods aren't playable cards. They're, you know, they're not
easily,
yeah, not conventionally playable cards. Like they just aren't really good, and it only really appeals to an anime fan. If you're an anime fan, you'll probably just shoot for the oldest copy of Exodia or something, as opposed to just these different new ones.
I feel like the Exodia pieces should have been commons in the OTS pack, and or I guess or they don't do commons. It'd be rares,
they do,
I guess.
Commons. They do, yeah, it's common, okay. Supers and ultimate.
I feel like they should have been commons just to get the reprints out there for Legacy of Destruction and then or Infinite Forbidden.
Mm-hmm.
And then let people who want to get, you know, hollow Exodia pieces, just go and get them.
Yeah,
because they're out there. They're not like there's no short supply on like high rarity Exodia pieces.
So that's the only confirmed ultimate that we have on it. There's also, of course, going to be two other ultimate rare cards.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to stake my money on something, I'm 100% thinking Diabella Star is in there.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
I think she will definitely be an ultimate rare. I don't know what the other one would be. Maybe it's just a Snake Eye card, or maybe it's like a voiceless voice card.
If it's a Snake Eye card, then I'd like to see it as Flamberg Dragon.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I think it could be. They might do Snake Eye Ash. Probably not, though. Probably Flamberg.
Since Ash feels like it might be in the target, the crosshair of the ban list, so maybe not.
Anyways, you guys might have been wondering, too, about Gamma Expo 2024.
I don't even know what that is.
I don't really either, but it's
like
an event where
Hulk convention?
Huh?
Like a Hulk convention?
Hulk?
Yeah, because gamma rays, like...
Oh, that's how the Hulk was made?
Gamma rays, Paul. You watched the MCU.
I haven't watched, like, the Hulk movies or whatever. I don't know anything about it. Anyways, Konami had an official Yu-Gi-Oh! Stand at Gamma Expo 2024 where they showcased several products that will be available this year. Wow. The presentation... There's actually the emoji that's on this tweet that I'm reading. That's why I reacted that way. It's from Yu-Gi-Oh! News TCG. Shout-outs to them, by the way, doing a better job of letting me know Yu-Gi-Oh! News and the company itself. The presentation revealed several new announcements. The first is Speedle GX Midterm Destruction.
I'm excited for that.
So, something kind of interesting about this is there were some rumors that this wasn't going to be releasing in Europe.
That was rumors.
I don't know if that's the case, so I can't comment on it. I don't know. Someone commented on it like last week. I was going to talk about it, and I just don't.
I've seen a few Reddit posts about the lack of midterm destruction, right? Midterm destruction.
Yeah.
Midterm destruction in the European regions.
It's almost like they took it down off the website.
Yeah, it's not listed on the EU like TCG page anymore as a product that's coming to the EU. But I'm still not sure if that's indicative of the product not actually coming out in the EU. But also, there were people saying that there were conflicting reports. There are people saying that their shops were not offering pre-orders for it, and there were people who said their shops were offering pre-orders for it. And then someone pulled up an email from some type of a Konami rep saying that they would not be providing that product to Europe, and it didn't look as like the most trustworthy thing to me.
So I can confirm it is not currently on their website,
but it is on our website.
It is on ours, so that's interesting. But
it would be.
I'd be weird not to release it though. Like, what does it make a difference?
Because typically, my understanding with how Konami deals with the EU, they already know sales in the EU will not be as high as they are in the US, and they usually just allocate for that. They're usually fine with it. So it'd be strange to all of a sudden say, maybe the EU doesn't like this product, when I'm fairly certain speed duels are very popular in Europe. Maybe even population density wise, more popular than it is in the States.
Well, either way, we got some confirmations. We see that Armed Dragon Level 10 White will be a secret rare promo. They typically will do some secret rare promos in these speed duel box sets.
It makes sense. This product is going to cover the Society of Light arc in Yu-Gi-Oh! GX.
Yeah, there's also Arcana Force. We do get to see another Neos reprint. That's nothing crazy.
Jaden's going to be in it,
So there's some fossil cards, it seems like. Some Tyranos.
There should be Dinos for Hasselberry, and then the fossils for Jim Crocodile.
Crook.
That's it.
Crook or Cook?
I think it's Cook.
I think of Crocodile from Pokemon.
Oh no, he's mixing his franchises.
Yeah, so that's pretty neat. And then also there is a new collection of Yu-Gi-Oh! Pins. Details are scant at the moment, but...
Oh, those are the rarity collection ones, right?
I've seen some pins.
It's strange, but fine, I guess.
I'll put up a picture.
I feel like the Ash Blossom pin will be quite popular.
I can't tell from this picture exactly how large these pins are.
I don't think they're very big.
Then why are they including all the monster text, the card text on them?
I mean, you couldn't read them in the real life anyway, so what's the difference?
Well, yeah, but at least in the real world, you can, squint. With these,
No, the font's the same size.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's what they look like to me in real life.
Yeah, so there's pins of cards. I don't know how you would get that. It might just be kind of giveaway prizes, I would assume.
Yeah, or it might just be some, random merch is put on, shelves. Yu-Gi-Oh! Loves that random just merch that just comes out of nowhere.
I won't complain about it. Sure, whatever. Okay, we'll find out more about it later. And then also they had Rarity Collection 2 on display, which I think was very tantalizing for people because people want to know what's in Rarity Collection 2, not what it looks like. They did not
confirm any of that.
Yeah, they didn't confirm any of that. Maybe somebody will do what tends to happen in these events and swipe one off.
Swipe one pack. Yeah.
Swipe one.
It's all test print cards. Not a single real card in it.
Might happen. So yeah, that's kind of cool. Just a little bit of confirmation that yes, things exist and they are happening. How you will get these pins, we don't know, but we do know at least that Rarity Collection is coming out later, and Midterm Destruction actually releases in just a couple of weeks on March 17th. I'm
really excited for that set.
Yeah, we're definitely going to try to do a little house tournament video.
They're going to expand on Jaden's Neospatian strategy there.
Yeah, so for those who might be wondering about this set of Blue Eyes White Dragons that we have displayed here, these came from the Seto Kaiba briefcase. I did pre-order that last year. It finally came in. Did an opening of it. Opening will be on the channel, one of these channels, at some point within the 24 hours or so that this goes live. So you will get to see it and see what came inside.
Paul's going to take the briefcase to his next tournament. He's going to carry his deck in it.
Yeah, the briefcase is actually meant to be you can hold cards in it and sort them and they have dividers. No,
but he's going to have one deck in it. It'll be his tournament deck.
A single deck.
Whenever he has to get ready to duel, he has to put the briefcase on the table.
Kaiba had his briefcase where the cards were all just flat laid out. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I don't know how he did that.
Was that his deck or his collection?
No, that was just his rare cards that he had for trade for one Blue Eyes.
Imagine a trade binder where it's a briefcase of just stuff on display. It's kind of cool.
But that's a heck of a flex. It's just look, old man, I want one card. Bam! Yeah,
give me your Blue Eyes and I'll trade you all of these.
It's like, all right, Grandpa, come on, I can see a deal when I see one. Come on, Grandpa.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty much the Yu-Gi-Oh! Stuff. Like, more or less, I might be forgetting something small. If it comes up, I'll just kind of mention it.
I did read that the Yu-Gi-Oh! Gold Rush manga is ending, but The more interesting part to me was I didn't know there was a Yu-Gi-Oh! Gold Rush manga.
Yeah, well, you know, to be fair, I actually don't know about any of the mangas for any of the... Because, like, they'll do the thing now where, like, the animes will come out and, like, they'll have a separate manga that's just after the... It'll come out, like, almost, like, after the anime or something.
I mean, the only... Weird. I feel like in the West, we only ever find out about the mangas if they have a promo that people want.
Yeah, pretty much. And now they don't really do, like, as many manga promos.
That's mostly... Well, these are, like, Seven-related manga, so...
Yeah, so I definitely don't know.
I guess they have Rush Card promos.
Yeah, not too many people are going to be after that.
I would want them.
Yeah. Okay, well, I guess that's it for Yu-Gi-Oh! A little bit of a shorter Yu-Gi-Oh! News day, but that's all right.
But there are other card game stories.
Yeah, there are. So you got anything for us?
Yeah. So this concerns Bandai with Digimon and One Piece, and I guess all their other card games. They're now going to be doing store regionals for Bandai card games.
So what is a store regional?
So as you already know, Bandai does regionals by partnering with a very, very like select few companies to run them, and they're only a few physical ones, and most of them are just online, and they've been awful to get into. You have to sign up months in advance. It's a whole annoying issue.
So what's changing here?
So now your card shop can sign up to host a Digimon or One Piece regional through an application they have on their website, and I don't know what the qualifications are for it, but then you get permission to hold a 64 person tournament, and there will be invites to like the
national tournaments.
Yeah, depending on I don't know how many to give out, but they will have invites. It will be a full regional, kind of like what we already have in Yu-Gi-Oh.
Right. Okay. That's cool. I remember Chris earlier today was saying, like, yeah, they're doing, you know, Digimon and One Piece store regionals. And I was like, wait, don't they do store championships? Which I thought was the same thing, but apparently it's not the same thing.
No, it's pretty much the same way it works in Yu-Gi-Oh! Our stores can have an OTS tournament, but your store can also host a regional.
Yeah.
So same thing, just different names.
Okay.
It took a while.
Yeah, I know he said something about it's like capped at 64 people.
Yes, they can't be like very, very large, but that's still better than what we've had.
Yeah, I mean, you think that this helps Digimon much? You know, you're kind of more invested in that
by a lot.
One Piece,
but I think it helps Digimon by a lot because I think a lot of people have not gotten into competitive Digimon because of how annoying it is to actually get into events.
Yeah, I know a lot of their events are online.
That's because it's
like remote.
Given the way Bandai has this thing situated, that was the best way to have a lot of events. But the problem was the online regionals, they were for anybody could sign up. So the most competitive players would just sign up for all of them. And
yeah,
they would fill up most
of
the spots.
Like it helped with the availability. You know what I think too is like doing them only online makes it feel like it's like we're kind of shoving you all into like this sort of like tucked away room. Like,
yeah,
I think
like
you need to have some more like physical events so people it legitimizes Digimon as like a game to play as opposed to like this really niche thing. Like,
it also helps with solidifying your community.
Yeah,
because as it stands, only having these like store championships, your local community would get to participate in it. So it doesn't really expand, and it doesn't commit. It doesn't connect with the wider Digimon or One Piece community that's like in your state or in your region. Having these regionals means it's more likely that even if your store your locals is not very large, you might be able to find a regional within driving distance that will bring out 60 some odd players from the overarching area that helps with what's the word I'm looking for when you like interact with people and trade information?
Socialization,
just
camaraderie,
connecting with other players that enjoy the same game as you.
Correct. Okay.
Right now, especially in Digimon card games, are very siloed off. Mm-hmm. That's why people are always claiming, "Oh, One Piece is dead. Digimon's the only game that exists. Oh, Digimon's dead. One Piece is the game that only exists because that's all they know."
Yeah. Okay, yeah, this is cool then. I mean, I'd like to, hopefully maybe there's one near us we can go. Maybe our card shop can do a Digimon regional. I don't know how you have to apply, but
it's a what's an application online. But your shop has to be kind of confident they can bring in they can get for it to be 60 worth it. People, and that. I mean, we'll see.
Can do that. Yeah,
we'll see.
Okay, cool. Well, I've got some other card game news. Dragon Ball card game Fusion World released digitally.
Yep,
is what I saw. So I am not super versed in the Dragon Ball Super card game Fusion World digital edition.
I don't think most people are.
However, I did see that it released. I saw people like Rhymestyle and Siriax. They were playing it, streaming it even, and the game looks pretty good.
Yeah, it's say. Because I saw Siriax's stream, and it looks good. It looks fine. It feels like they're borrowing assets from the Dokken battle game, because you know, they have those like 3D battles in there.
Yeah, the characters like show up on the arena when you play. That was pretty cool.
Which gives it a leg up as in this like realm of mobile card games and like digital platforms. No one's really doing the full 3D model thing.
Yeah, that's true. Something that I noticed, so I don't know too much about like the metagame. This is more just me bringing it up.
We don't know anything about the base game, much less the metagame. Yeah, I've never even
played Dragon Ball Super to begin with. But something that I did notice, though, is that I do think the card art, it's kind of just generic images of the characters. That is something that, for card games, I'm never a big fan of. I hope that they can take the Digimon route.
Oh, like yeah.
Pokemon with, route.
Like, stylized.
Where you get more art pieces
of them. I get you.
The scenes and characters as opposed to just sort of the more like stock imagery things.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen some of the cards. They look fine to me. It's honestly exactly what I expect from a Dragon Ball card game. But I know Bandai and who's that? Toei involved with Dragon Ball.
Yeah, Toei,
I know
for sure.
They're extremely protective of that franchise. And so we may never see that kind of like artwork in that card game.
Yeah, I remember hearing like a rumor at one point that like certain characters couldn't even be like featured together on the same card, like in an art piece of art. Like if they did, it'd have to be like sectioned off, like in separate sections. Like they couldn't be in the same collective piece of art. Don't like quote me on that. That's just something that I remember hearing through the grapevine. And I know like
Paul spreading rumors.
Yeah, me when I spread misinformation on the internet. No, I mean I don't even know if that's true. It's just something I vaguely heard. But that's pretty cool if you're into Dragon Ball Super Fusion World. Then you probably already knew this, but yeah, now you can maybe check it out.
You can try it online. Download. And even if you're not in, I guess not as an online client, you can try out.
It's so strange to me, though, that like this got an online client and like Digimon and One Piece just, like, come on.
It tells you where they want to spend their money. They want to spend their money on the game that already died twice.
Now, my
question
is, does Fusion World have a physical card game then?
Yeah. It already came out.
Okay.
Yeah, it came out, I think, 2 weeks before the digital client came out.
Oh.
Because I remember that they were doing a pre-release for it. And Alex, he actually went to it, and he played a bit, and he was telling me about it.
Okay, did he like it?
Yeah, I mean, he liked it fine. I mean, we're Dragon Ball fans. If I actually touched a card, I'd probably like it. That's why I'm just trying not to touch the cards.
Well, there's another card that you can touch soon. That's Star Wars Unlimited.
Oh, Lord.
Which actually, I know we've talked about that a little bit on this podcast. It actually releases this week.
Yeah.
So,
This one's weird to me because the game Star Wars Unlimited has this weird kind of hype behind it. It's not hype in the typical sense where there's this massive amount of people who can't wait to play and they're pounding Twitter down with just their tweets about Star Wars Unlimited. Star Wars Unlimited has this strange kind of everyone's locals or many locals just have a group of people who are like ready and primed for this game. And there's just these like there's just pockets of people and it's a lot of pockets of people that are interested in Star Wars Unlimited. So like I've noticed this is a lot of interest within groups, not like a massive wave, but I think it's a sign that Star Wars Unlimited might be here for a while.
Yeah, I was just reading this sort of review about it, and it seems to be reviewing really well. People like it. Their organized play system is called the Galactic Championship, which I thought sounded kind of fun.
I don't like that name.
I don't know enough about Star Wars to know if that's like a good or a bad name for it's it, just, but.
When you say Galactic and Star Wars, I would like a more in-lore title for this event.
Isn't Star Wars is the one where it's like in a galaxy far, far away. That's like how it starts,
yes,
right?
Okay. Yes. I didn't know about
Star
Wars
or Star Trek or whatever. Oh, God. But I don't know any of these things. I think it'd be cool if like the tournaments were called that, like at a tournament far, far away or something.
Yeah, you know, something I do like, kind of like in lore cheesy things like that. Galactic Championship just feels like we need a name and this is good enough.
Yeah. Something also that was at the end of this review that I thought was kind of poignant is that this reviewer, this is on, what is this website? Metro.co.
So anyways. You just be finding stuff, y'all.
Yeah, that's not just find stuff and throw it in my whole list of links. Trading card games are kind of like live service titles in that there's never any guarantee as to which will be successful. But Star Wars Unlimited has everything in its favor with unique game rules, plenty of depth, a compelling setting, and a great artwork. Not even Yoda can see the future with complete accuracy, but it looks like the world of TCGs has got another big league player. So what's kind of interesting about that is describing trading card games as like live service titles. Do you think that analogy checks out in a general sense?
Yeah, I think so. We have a lot of the same things you suffer from in the world of live service, we also suffer from in like Yu-Gi-Oh! And so.
Like, what are those things?
So a hyper scrutiny of the way that the game is managed, because you live and die by game updates.
Yes.
So you want regular updates, and then you scrutinize the living mess out of them, because when the update drops, then you hear nothing from the company that runs your game for months and months and months, and you get another update. And then there's also the monetization scheme.
Yeah, lots
booster
of,
packs are a lot like,
are like loot boxes. Loot boxes. Kind of gambly, you know.
Yeah.
I think too, there's like cosmetics.
Yeah.
Where like you can get like high rarity versions of cards, like you know, think mm-hmm. of Yu-Gi-Oh or Pokemon or whatever.
Now we don't have like a subscription model in most TCGs, but you could argue that the league system that a lot of people are using in their games is a subscription model. You buy into the league, you get X amount of packs per week while playing, like. It's a bit of a subscription
too,
thing.
Too, with like live service games and TCGs, a big similarity is like hatred for the developers.
Yeah, we can't stand them.
Now, I know that technically every game, it seems like now, people don't like the developers. It's almost like just the cost of entry. Cost of doing business is like your players will kind of hate you. But I do think with like live service games and with card games, it's bigger because like people, and you touched on it a moment ago, people really scrutinize.
Yeah.
Every new release kind of feels like it has to be amazing or terrible. Like, it's just, it's a very binary thing. This new pack sucks, or this new pack broke the game. And, you know, any just card balance is so combed over.
I was about to mention in the waifu gacha gaming community, it's different, but no, there's actually quite a few instances of those communities turning on their devs too. And they can be quite vicious.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it makes me feel a little bad for Konami, and I'm, you know, not typically the person who's got loads of sympathy for them, but, like...
You apologist.
Yeah, but I do think that, like, you know, managing these card games seems like it's a little rough. Like, I remember when One Piece was doing that ban list controversy, like, a couple months back, where they were like, here's a ban list, oh, whoops, you guys didn't like it, sorry, we take it back. Like, I know that wasn't exactly how that went. Like, someone informed me that it was... They were, like, kind of catching up to another list from somewhere else.
Sure.
But... Either way, it just, like, knowing that, like, anything you do will just be under immediate live scrutiny mm-hmm. is rough, so.
I mean, but it's all, that's the nature of the beast. You want to make a living game where you give them more of the game over time. So, potentially, that means you gave them less game when you began. You leave yourself open to a lot of criticism because people are like, I invested my time and money into you. Now make good on it.
There's also the whole like thing with patches. I guess ban lists are what you would call patches.
Yeah,
ban
lists are balance fixes.
Though I think in card games, you can't really go back in time. So once cards have been printed, it's a little harder to reprint them, like, or to errata them.
We typically scream for erratas, but card games, they don't like errating. I think it takes too much trouble.
I mean, errating is actually, like, people want them. My hot take is that, like, I don't even know if this is a hot take. I think erratas shouldn't really happen often. I think they should be only an absolute, you know, big typo sort of situations. Because when you do erratas, you start to begin to normalize this process of, like, the card you get isn't even what you got.
Right.
Like you might be kind of, you might pull a cool card and it's got a strong effect or whatever, and there's a real chance in 6 months. No, it just doesn't work this way anymore.
The in live service gaming, as close as you get to an errata is like a fix to something.
Because digitally, typically, you can patch characters.
Yeah.
And like nerf so-and-so's shot doesn't go as far or does less damage.
Like, typically, when you, if you do like the digital version of an errata, it's much easier to roll out. And they only usually do it when something's broken or it's just not as good as it was supposed to. You're not supposed to, like in the like gacha gaming community, you're not supposed to make a character worse after people have already spun for it.
Yeah.
You only make them better.
Right.
Because they've already invested their money. So I think in that way, that's why most TCGs just kind of stay away from erratas. Permanently changing what a card does,
it's rough.
It is kind of like a bait and switch.
It's a bait and switch. And then also, like, Yu-Gi-Oh's had some pretty rough stories with erratas. You know that one wave of them?
No.
With like Ring of Destruction, Crush Card Virus, Chaos Emperor.
We want to make these cards legal, so let's just neuter them.
They completely nerfed them into the ground. And now, it's interesting because now the power creep and stuff of the game has made it such that those cards, some of them, even in their original forms, might not have been very good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've got these awkward instances of Brain Control getting a weird nerf, but now Change of Heart is legal, which Change of Heart was always better than Brain Control.
Better than Brain Control across
and
the board.
So now that's legal and fine, and then Brain Control, which was worse than Change of Heart, is now sitting in this extremely awkward, neutered state where there's not ever a reason to run Brain Control.
Brain Control is like, oh, I guess F me then. Like,
yeah, and it's just so weird. Or just cards like Ring of Destruction kind of functionally don't work as well. Crush Card Virus can actively help your opponent. Like, it's...
They did Crush Card. Crush Card dirty.
They did a lot of them dirty. I mean, like, Chaos Emperor Dragon, Demok, a lot of them just, they lose their legacy kind of appeal and just end up being...
bulk filler.
Yeah, like, bulk filler. And so, I don't know, kind of got off on a tangent there about erratas, but I don't like them much. I don't believe in, like, I know that sometimes I'll see people on Reddit or Twitter being like, oh, what if they, like, errata Pot of Greed and, like, or whatever, and could bring it back, or Graceful Charity. I say don't.
Busted and banned.
Yeah, busted and banned, because the nerfed Pot of Greed that you're looking for is Extravagance, or Desires, or Prosperity.
You can print a new, but worse version. Like, remember, Subs Toad and Trade Toad?
Yeah, which Dredo did not.
Yeah, that didn't
do much. But, you know, so I think I'm kind of anti-errata outside of, like, actual functional, you know, like this card had a typo and does not function as intended. So, anywho, that's Star Wars Unlimited. You're going to be grabbing a pack, ripping one open?
I'm trying my best not to, y'all.
Ripping
I'm
open trying a cold to stay. One with the boys.
I'm trying to do my best to not try it.
Okay. Any other card game stories you got?
Yeah. Do you remember the Pokemon TCG Classic product?
I do.
Yeah. Is a high-end retro Pokemon product.
It's the one that came with, like, kind of the plastic board and
yeah,
like some stuff.
Yeah, it
like
had like a nice board. Inside. It had decks themed with all these, like, old 151 Pokemon. Wow. Premium quality stuff,
overpriced.
Right? Well, they just dropped the price down by 23% on the Pokemon Amazon store.
Oh, so the official Pokemon Amazon?
That's like
How much is it now? Is it like $300, I guess?
Let's see. They only gave me the percentage, so I have to do some math.
Because I think that the product was like $400.
I'm trying to find a link. Oh, I know, I'm just going to open up the original article.
That's so weird. Why would they say 23% and not just also give the price?
You would think it would just be in this article somewhere, but for
can
the life
also
of me...
look this up just so I can...
I cannot find... I can just the straight up price on the product. Can I get a link to the Pokemon Amazon page? That'll make this so much easier.
Yeah, that's very bizarre. Okay, well here I've got a good one. All Pokemon TCG Classic Retro Throwback drops 23% off price. Cool. This is from Dexerto. Is that where you were?
Yeah, that's my issue. I don't have the actual.
That's so price. Weird. They don't mention the price.
No.
Okay, well here I'm pulling it up on Amazon. We're going to get to the bottom of this, all right?
Yeah, how much will it cost Paul to buy me a Pokemon TCG Classic?
It is 23% off at $306.45 now.
I'll take it. Thank you.
So, why 23% and not 25%? Why not just make it $299.99? That's very odd.
There's some some
algorithmic price setting thing. Well, either way, that's a big discount.
I think we're seeing a Platinum Dark Magician situation, at least, but they actually have the sense to discount it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think this thing's sold. I mean, so you just as a refresher for you guys, you get three 60-card decks starring classic Pokemon Venusaur, Charizard, and Blastoise, three deck boxes, three sets of card sleeves, a two-player game board, a toolbox case with randomize, two sets of damage counter cones, two sets of condition markers. So, yeah, it's kind of just this like big kit thing. It could be useful for a nostalgic fan or whatever, but it's $400.
Or was.
Was $400. Now I guess it's about $300.
Which, I mean, I think they probably sold a few. There are always going to be people who meet them at these crazy price points. But I think at this point, they're sitting in inventory. And they're like, okay, how much do we need to discount this to get sales moving again? And if this isn't enough, they're going to cut it down again. Because at the end of the day, they just want the things gone.
I remember when I first heard about this product, actually, I was like, what is this $400 for like three decks and a little plastic like play kit? Like, it's very much a Platinum Dark Magician feeling.
Or well, Magic remember, 30. There was also, people were complaining when that got announced. They're like, what is this? Why are you doing this?
I just don't really understand. I mean, also, these are like the old kind of style cards. Like, I don't even know if these are really usable in the game currently. Like, the Pokemon TCG game, somebody can inform me more about that.
I don't even think they're legal in the actual current
TCG. Or if they are, I don't think you want to use them. I mean,
if they are legal, they'd be horrible. So, just to, like, give you guys some other options if you're interested in this product. You know, you can pick this up on TCG Player for, like, $280.
Oh, so the official kind of price has gone down some, but there's still like just cheaper ones.
See, that's never online. What you want to see when you're trying to market a premium product, when the secondary market is below your MSRP.
When I see this product, I think this should have cost like $100 max.
Woo!
That's what I see. I don't know how.
Three decks?
Yeah, three decks.
Two-player game board? Sleeves? Tokens?
Yeah, well, you know. You might be onto something, because those game boards must be worth a fair bit, since Konami doesn't like to include them in their starter products.
Oh! So,
maybe a game board's actually worth a lot. And no, I'm not even trying to be mean about that here. I'm just trying to figure out where are these companies, like, getting these... Like, what is inflating the price this much? Like, I get it, corporate greed, but, like, I mean, if they were to explain it to mom and dad, right, who are buying the product at the store, like, what do you tell them justifies a $400 price tag?
It's for the sophisticated.
Is it Charizard? Is it like, I don't.
I thought
is it the game board?
I thought all the pieces were made of crystal or something.
Yeah, like, because I thought, are they like metal cards? I don't.
Someone's actually selling this for $175, but it says open box, no cards.
What are you buying? Plastic board, I guess?
The board and like the accessories.
Maybe the accessories.
For $175. Maybe that appeals to somebody.
Very bizarre. I don't think I will be partaking.
I never did actually see what this thing looked like open. I'm looking up images.
I haven't seen that either. I never even bothered to watch. I mean, once I heard that it was just three decks, I don't really think there's much
else. Oh, look, it's a very, can I get a better quality picture? Maybe
no.
All right, I just got to deal with the picture I got. You get this kind of black and white board that looks really bland.
That seems like it takes up a lot of space, like to put on your table too.
I think you get a table just for it. Like, you know how like ritzy people would have like a small table with a chessboard on it as a set piece. It's just like the table is just there for the chessboard. Yeah. I think that they imagine is you'd have a table for this. Like, oh, hello, over drinks, gentlemen. You would like to play a game of Pokemon?
Yeah, Pokemon Retro Classic.
Nah, I'm good. I'm good on that. But if Paul wants to buy me one of these, I'll graciously accept it.
I don't.
My birthday's coming up, so you know, but I just like actually, be. Honestly, it's only in like a week or so. So
I don't think I'll be purchasing.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, I think shipping will probably take about a week anyway.
Well, anywho, that's a great bit of Pokemon news. Are there any other card game stories?
Let's see.
I'm surprised I don't have a Magic one. There's typically one on here every week.
I mean, everyone's just talking about Fallout. And I'm so sick of talking about Fallout.
Yeah.
I think okay, I don't really talk about Fallout. But There's a lot about the Fallout thing. Everything about Magic right now is just crossovers, crossovers, crossovers. Assassin's Creed, Fallout. We've mentioned all these things. We haven't really gone in depth on it because I'm not very interested in the Assassin's Creed and Fallout crossovers. But I did have a story about cheating. Yeah, so this popped up last week on my Twitter feed.
Okay.
A top Malaysian One Piece card game player, this is in the One Piece, I think, Asian circuit, was caught cheating during a flagship tournament. I don't know what that actually qualifies as, but someone snatched multiple videos of this guy cheating mid-tournament. You can hit watch again on literally any of these, and you can see very blatantly his style of cheating.
Oh, he's like just pulling cards out from
between his legs or underneath it, like that 12-year-old schoolyard style of cheating.
Wow, just hands under the table.
But my understanding is, at least in this circuit, they don't have deck checks or judges. Or a judge program.
Yeah, so if that's the case, I don't know that much about how this works, whatever this is called. What is it called?
There was no name for this. At least not from this tweet. There's probably a name for it. Okay. I don't know what it is.
Because this just sounds like this is an extremely lawless wasteland sort of situation.
But they called it a flagship tournament. This is a large tournament, and this guy's just digging underneath himself.
Is the flagship the name of a system or
no? I don't know what that is. I think it's a title that they're using because they don't speak whatever language is being used here.
Okay, well. Either way, that's a very just bland, low form of cheating. Just
the
schoolyard feeling.
Schoolyard cheating in this day and age, guys. I certainly do not condone cheating, but at least be a little bit more creative than this.
Yeah, something. Christ. Okay. Well, since we're done with our card games, I think I've got some pretty exciting stories. But first, how about a little update on the Nintendo and Yuzu controversy?
Oh, yeah.
Or a lawsuit, rather.
Mm.
Okay, so Nintendo, you might remember last week, they'd sued the developers of the Switch emulator Yuzu for, quote, facilitating piracy at a colossal scale.
Nintendo is so dumb, they have no case.
Yeah, that is what I heard a lot of people saying. That's what people said. Well, here's the update to it. Now, it appears that Yuzu will give up without a fight and give Nintendo everything it wanted. So, according to a joint filing, Tropic Haze LLC, those are, I guess, the makers of Yuzu, has not only agreed to pay $2.4 million to Nintendo, it also agrees that Yuzu was primarily designed to circumvent and play Nintendo Switch games, and agrees to be permanently enjoined from working on Yuzu, hosting Yuzu, distributing Yuzu's code or features, hosting Yuzu websites and social media, or doing anything else that circumvents Nintendo's copyright protection. And it will also surrender the yuzu-emu.org domain name to Nintendo, agrees to delete not only its copies of Yuzu, but also all circumvention tools used for developing or using Yuzu, such as, Tegra, RCM, GUI, Hecate, Atmosphere, Lockpick,
some
other dumping and tools and stuff, and also hand over any physical circumvention devices and any modified Nintendo hardware over to Nintendo. It also agrees to not delete any other evidence that infringes Nintendo's IP rights. So you can read through the entire final judgment and permanent injunction, but yeah, I mean, Nintendo won this one without really even having to.
Let's just move on to the next one. I want to talk about something else.
Yeah, this one really sucks. They also, it sounds like Citra is being discontinued, which was the 3DS emulator.
Oh, that's lame, because 3DS is gone. Or at least the 3DS eShop is gone, which means your 3DS is useless.
Yeah, so this one's rough. Like you said, a lot of people last week were saying, Nintendo has no case whatsoever for this.
No one's saying that. Anyone who said something like that has mysteriously disappeared from the planet.
Yeah, well.
Whew. Now we're just mad at Nintendo. And we made no statements to the contrary of what would happen. We are lawyers, and we knew this would happen from the beginning.
Yeah. So, what do you think about it all?
It just kind of makes sense. It was only a matter of time before Nintendo cracked down on one of the biggest IP and copyright infringing organizations that they've had to deal with. I mean, I've never emulated a game, but every time I've ever seen a game emulated, or when someone close to me emulates, it's typically Nintendo. Nintendo's games are the
most timeless and emulatable games
on the market. And it was only a matter of time before Nintendo found some way to get at the people doing it. I know we like to say, oh, there's all these protections and emulation isn't actually illegal, yada, yada, yada. Guys, it was only a matter of time. Now, is it great? No. Because
for games preservation, it's a really big loss.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people are big on games preservation. And like you said, the Nintendo 3DS is no longer on sale. You can't, like,
you can't
walk up and just buy it.
Can't buy a 3DS. You can maybe find it at, like, and even some if used you game do, store. The shop is gone.
Yeah.
There's no support.
Yes. So in that way, this is a really big loss. However, it is true that a lot of people were just using this for privacy. Piracy. And I that's kind of where I am always, like, it's a bit harder to stick on the bus for stuff like this, because I'm all for the idea of games preservation. It's just that you know a lot of people were just downloading Switch ROMs, hopping on this emulator and playing them and not intending to ever buy them themselves.
I think those are if you want to blame someone, I wouldn't blame Nintendo per se. I would blame the people who, instead of buying Tears of the Kingdom or buying Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, they just emulated them. And then to make matters worse, they were emulating the games even before they had official releases. That's going to land on Nintendo's radar. That's going to make them want to do something about it.
Yeah, and also Yuzu was making money. They had a Patreon, so that's kind of a thing. The moment that you're making money off it, now Nintendo's really upset, because it's like, oh, so you're making money off of our games. And apparently that Patreon was hiding, like, behind a paywall, I guess, you know, patches for the software, things like that. So it's a rough one. One interesting thing, though, is that because this is a settlement and did not actually really go to court, it won't necessarily set a legal precedent. However, I think it would scare a lot of, I mean, I think seeing that $2.4 million, you know, price tag might scare off a lot of emulation development in the future, but it won't, you know, scare everybody off. People will always try to find ways to.
I mean, as long as $2.4 million is not even a remotely feasible number, like if I have $10 to my name, hypothetically, not the real me, but if I had $10 to my name, what do I care if Nintendo's going to get mad at me for emulating their games and try and hit me with $2.4 million settlement or judgment? I'd never have that money. It's not a real amount of money. So if you're too poor, it doesn't matter. I think it matters when you do have a little bit of money. You're like, you know, I got a few thousand in the bank. You don't want to be hit with a $2.4 million debt.
Yeah. So.
And I think that was precisely the situation Yuzu was in. They had some money, and allegedly Nintendo could have come after them for a lot more than $2.4 million.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess
take the L and go bankrupt.
I don't know the specifics of it, because, like, I don't use Yuzu, so I don't know enough. I just know that this was bound to happen. You know,
it is what it is, y'all. You know, this is the world. This is capitalism.
Yeah, it's capitalism, and it's also, like, you know, when you're dealing in piracy and, like, emulation, you always have to know that there's kind of the other foot could come down at any time.
There's risk with the pirate life.
Yeah, there's some risk. So speaking of update risk, on Yuzu, would love to hear what people think.
Speaking of risks, there's one company that doesn't want to take risks ever again.
Okay.
So, after the disappointment that was the Suicide Squad Kills game, WB doubles down on live service games.
What do they mean by doubles down?
The best-selling game of 2023 was Hogwarts Legacy. Yet, despite that single-player title selling 22 million copies, publisher Warner Brothers Discovery will be pivoting away from single-player AAA console games and toward free-to-play live service and mobile releases. This comes from a Morgan Stanley speaking event at which Warner Brothers Discovery head of gaming J.B. Perrette, talked about the company's plans going forward. Next part is a quote. The challenge we've had is that our business historically has been very AAA console based. Okay. And so, you know, that's a great business when you have a hit like Harry Potter. It makes the year look amazing, said Perrette. And then when you don't have a release, or unfortunately, we also have disappointments. We just released Suicide Squad this quarter, which was not as strong. It just makes it very volatile. So what he's saying is the AAA market is volatile because they released Hogwarts Legacy, best-selling game of the year.
And they released
Suicide Squad, which could, this isn't running for being the bomb of the year.
Yeah.
And they would rather run to the live service free-to-play mobile market, focusing on only their biggest multi-billion dollar franchises, than stay in this volatile market and not just make good AAA games to begin with.
Yeah, okay. Well, my initial thought on this is that I get where they're coming from. I know that for live service games, the idea of a live service game would be like this really consistent revenue stream for a company, right? Mm-hmm. Like you have this live service game where just people are subscribed to it, or they're getting their battle pass or whatever it is, and like you can make money over time, you know, passive income, entrepreneur, or whatever.
No, you sound like one of those guys online.
But no, like, it's just, there is continued guaranteed revenue as opposed to, like, staking it all on a AAA game and hoping that that game sells well, or, like, it kind of captures people's interest. And then even when it does, you only get that one, like, $60 or $70 purchase from them. And then, like, there's not a guarantee that they'll buy your next game, as they've seen. So I totally see, you know, as a company, why they're doing it. But it is kind of, like, rough to hear in a period of time where it feels like the live service game category is, it's a little, like, I think people are getting a little burnt of it.
I think people are burnt of it. I think my biggest criticism of this is it feels like they're a little cross-eyed on what they're looking at and what's really happening. They're saying it's volatile to release AAA games, but you're comparing Hogwarts Legacy, you know, to the horrible bigots who played it, and to Suicide Squad. One game is clearly developed with care and was finished before being released, and the other was clearly a mismanagement.
It's like it was a mismanagement rush.
It's like, I don't think you should get to say, oh, this market is volatile, when we gave you a brick of gold and a pile of shit.
Yeah, I totally get you. Well, I should first just go ahead and say, I loved Hogwarts Legacy. I'm not a bigot. you just clear that up right now. But in all seriousness, though, yeah, I mean, Hogwarts Legacy is a good game, and like Suicide Squad isn't. And I think that comparing them apples to apples should make it pretty clear that the game that got development attention and like proper marketing and stuff would do better than the game that seemed to be a bit of a development hell.
It was a mess. And then they're looking at the live service market as if that's some bright green pasture.
That's what a lot of companies think it is, though. A lot of companies, like, it's exactly what I described. It's this idea that, you know, people will just play your game forever, and you'll make an average per customer of, like, you know, $20 a month, let's say. Over the course of the entire year, you know, the value of the customer is, like, really high. Like, I don't think it's working out like that, though. I think people can only really even tolerate playing so many live service games at a time. Mm-hmm. You can probably speak to this. I know you play a lot of Fortnite.
Yeah.
But in exchange, you know, how many other live service games are you able to concurrently keep in your life, like, in actual active play?
Yeah, I think the live service market is actually more competitive than the AAA market because these games never go away. You're competing with the best live service games from 5 years ago today, and there's still more coming out. You know, they want to sit behind, they list their major IPs that they want to make games around. Harry Potter, DC, Mortal Kombat, and Game of Thrones. Yeah, these are strong titles. How confident are you putting them next to Fortnite, putting them next to the yearly release sports games, putting them next to all these other live service, like Call of Duty, all these other live service titles that have been here? They're not going away. They make millions.
You know, I'm actually very surprised that sports games have not gone live service yet.
I guess.
Have they?
I've always seen them as kind of like live service games.
Yeah, that's the thing. I've always seen sports games as like they come out the same time each year, and they're always like the same price. So you could almost view it as a subscription, and that the person who buys, you know, NBA 2K23 will also buy 24 and will also buy 25.
And it's like their online sides of the parts of the game that like that people play and stick around for.
I'm just surprised that they haven't literally turned it into a subscription. You don't even go to buy
the game. Oh, that's what you mean. I mean, that is a surprise.
You just pay like $10 a month and you're just playing 2K or Madden forever.
They're very comfortable with those microtransactions.
Because those games don't change like very much. Like graphically, you get like maybe one graphical leap per generation or so. But like generally, it seems like each year, what minor mechanical tweaks, I assume, and then just like the team rosters themselves update. But like that's something that a live service game would do even better.
Like you think they could do that, and I think you think it would be easier too. But maybe there's some reason that they make more money the way that they do it now. I'm not 100% sure what that is, but I will say as far as sports games go, graphically, I think whenever they would take steps towards having better graphics, I think the gameplay would suffer for it.
I mean, it seems like
I don't think they really need it.
The teams for those games are always really small. Like, I think that they don't allocate a lot of people to making Madden or any of these games, really. I think it's just kind of...
Wait, is Madden still around?
Oh, goodness.
I thought we lost Madden some years ago. I thought that was also just 2K now.
I know we lost NCAA.
I thought Madden got dropped, and we went back to this 2K football games. Look, guys, I haven't played sports games in a minute.
Game in a while, so
I played the old 2Ks. I played Madden, and then I heard Madden was gone.
Well, either way, it sounds like for Warner Brothers, if this is the path they're going to take, I guess they'll just have to deal with the fallout of it if some of these live service games don't work out. I know that they are bringing back like Multiversus pretty soon. That's supposed to be coming out again.
Is it leaving beta? Or alpha, or whatever it was.
Official release of Multiversus.
For the first time, its first real release, huh?
Multiversus is finally coming out.
That's weird because I feel like I've played it before. I don't know what. That's so weird. Yeah.
Weird how that works. Well, speaking of Warner Brothers, they're also dropping Rooster Teeth. So Rooster Teeth is shutting down after 21 years. Parent company Warner Brothers Discovery, after unsuccessful attempts to sell the unprofitable fandom, gaming, and comedy entertainment division, is shutting down Rooster Teeth's operations. Rooster Teeth general manager Jordan Levin announced the shutdown of Austin-based Rooster Teeth at an all-hands meeting Wednesday and in a memo distributed to staff. The closure of Rooster Teeth will result in layoffs of its approximately 150 full-time employees and will throw dozens of contractors and content creators out of work as well. So that's really unfortunate. It's with a heavy heart that I announced that Rooster Teeth is shutting down due to challenges facing digital media resulting from fundamental shifts in consumer behavior and monetization across platforms, advertising, and patronage. Our legacy is not just a collection of content, but a history of pixels burned into our screens, minds, and hearts.
I mean, Rooster Teeth has been around for so long, and they made, like, I would call, like, cultural impacts, at least in the online YouTube space. It's weird to say they're gone.
I didn't know that it was 21 years old. I knew Rooster Teeth was quite old. Mm-hmm. Like I knew it did come in the like 2000, like kind of right before 2010. I just didn't know that it was that old. Because I remember watching Red versus Blue. I don't know if you know that, like the Halo kind of machinima thing or whatever.
I wasn't a very devout follower of Red versus Blue, but if you existed during that time, it was kind of hard not to see something of it.
Yeah, I remember that. What is the show they made?
I mean, they've made a few, but I was really attached to Ruby.
Okay.
But I guess Ruby's just never going to end now because I don't know how long they had planned that story to be, but we did not reach a conclusion. Nothing, honestly, nowhere close to one.
Here's a little brief history. Rooster Teeth was founded in 2003 by Bernie Burns, Matt Holm, Jeff Ramsey, a bunch of names. After multiple ownership changes, it became part of Warner Brothers Discovery 2 years ago. In 2019, then-owner Warner Media tapped Levin, former CEO of the Warner Brothers, as general manager of Rooster Teeth. So, They've been through it. They've done a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, Rooster Teeth has done so much. They always tried to, in my opinion, kind of shoot above their means. They always had these grand ideas for their like works, and a lot of them fell flat, like after their kind of initial cultural appeal.
Isn't Ruby doing like a collab right now?
Did.
What was the collab in?
They did
what
a, game they, was it? Wait, a game collab?
Or an anime collab? Ruby collabed with something recently, didn't it?
They have they've done a few things. I know they just released the Justice League Extra Ruby crossover movie.
Part 2
came out on HBO Max not long ago. That franchise has traveled too. It helps that they're being owned by Warner Brothers. It gave them more connections. They did the Ruby anime.
Ruby was in, was it Guilty Gear? Or Blaze Blue or something?
Wait, not Guilty. It was the tag battle game.
Grand Blue?
Was that? It was one of the kind of like Arc Systems Works-esque tag battle games. I can't remember the name of it right now.
Yeah, well, either way, it's unfortunate. The Rooster Teeth is going. I hope that at least the people that work there are able to find more work within the industry, particularly like the people who are like content creators, you know, people who worked in marketing, art design, all that stuff. Because I remember hearing a lot about Ruby. I remember the conversation about like, is Ruby anime?
Similar
vein to like people who talk about like Avatar, Last Airbender. Like, is it anime?
But I mean, they even had like some big swings with their Michael B. Jordan led series. I just lost the name of it. Anyway, they tapped Michael B. Jordan to make a show, and they made it. And I think it had two seasons. Genlock, and I guess that doesn't end either.
Okay, yeah, interesting.
I'm gonna miss it.
You're smiling like you're happy it's gone or something.
I mean, it's weird. I think with a lot of people, I have a love hate relationship with Rooster Teeth. I have dear memories of Rooster Teeth's works and them in general. So that's sad, but going corporate and all that brought with it, the production delays, the people leaving the projects, in a weird way, it's kind of nice that we can close the book on it.
It's all in.
And you know, and if you work for Rooster Teeth, I am not in any way advocating like I'm happy you lost your job. That is not what I intend. But as a fan of Rooster Teeth, I'm a big fan of endings. And even though their works don't get to end,
I'd
like to see them end before they get any more corporate.
Before things get like worse. That's a take on it, yeah. Okay. Any other stories?
I think that was all. That's all I had. Yep, I'm tapped out.
Okay, well, there's one last one I've got before we reach into the pot. See what I did there? Roblox and Fortnite sued for targeting kids' gaming addictions. Now, this is just another lawsuit, so I don't know where this goes.
Where is this lawsuit
coming from? An Atlanta-based law firm is going after your favorite video games to save young people from gaming addictions. So, Tina Bullock, the COO and managing partner of Atlanta-based firm Bullock Ward Mason, tells Axios they're suing the companies behind Roblox and, quote, just about everything that you can think of that is a multiplayer game, accusing them of tactics and... No, I'm not signing up for this. Accusing them of tactics and microtransactions targeted toward actively engaging children. So, the context for Roblox, it's, you know, the California-based social platform for teens and tweens, where users create or visit virtual experiences, usually games designed for multiplayer activities. Nearly half of the game's 71.5 million daily active users are under the age of 13. So,
makes sense.
Yeah, what they're saying is that by the time children or parents learn about the dangers associated with Roblox and its unfair practices, taking advantage of children, users are so addicted to the game they cannot stop purchasing and spending Robux to continue gameplay, the lawsuit states. They're not too pleased about Roblox. They're also involved in Arkansas-based suits against Call of Duty, Fortnite, and Grand Theft Auto.
Okay, this is casting the world's largest net.
So there's that age-old kind of like games are corrupting the youth, and
it's the thing is they have a point, but they don't even know. I don't know if they really know what their point is or even how to make it, because gaming addiction, as far as I know, is not considered real yet. Like, you know, there are things that are considered addictions, there are things we take seriously. Right now, gaming addiction is not one of them, and to base a lawsuit off of the idea of gaming addiction feels flimsy. I'm not a lawyer, though. I could be wrong. Maybe they have a case. Though I do think if this was like one of those EU cases where like the might of Europe is bearing down on the gaming community, I think they will be able to do something here. But I just don't see. I mean, I'm sorry. Who is this again? Tina Bullock? Good luck, Tina. I just don't see this going anywhere.
Yeah, Bullock partnered with attorneys in New York and San Francisco last month to file a class action lawsuit against Roblox on behalf of several parents, alleging the company committed labor law violations, false advertising, and fraud by exploiting child labor. Haven't heard about that. And offering children, quote, nearly worthless digital currency for their labor. So,
I think they're talking about how, Roblox, like a lot of those games, it's a lot of user-generated content. You have your server and you make the game yourself.
Now, here's one interesting thing. The lawsuit states that $4.99 can buy you 400 Robux, but 1,000 Robux can only be converted for $3.50. So, I guess Robux are a system that's like, I guess they're kind of currency in the game.
Yeah.
But you can convert the currency into cash, which I was not aware of. However, converting it into cash obviously is not a good exchange for you, since it takes $5 to get 400 Robux, but 1,000 Robux is only worth $3.50. So converting back is obviously like a loss for the user, and
but
that's
that,
one of the things they're talking about.
In a way,
here.
That makes a lot of sense, though, right? If you can earn Robux in the game. I'm saying if you can earn Robux in the game, then having a more, you might call consistent exchange rate would lead to so much just player BS.
It actually makes it feel like it would be like a bank. Like Robux is like, Roblox is your bank.
Yeah, I'm going to go hide my money, convert it over to Robux,
money laundering,
make it disappear.
Through Robux, yeah.
I don't know, it makes more sense to me that at least there is a way to convert this currency into like actual dollars, because most of the time, for the vast majority of games, if you buy their premium currency, it's
stuck there now.
There's no return on that investment.
It sounds like there even is a way to convert it back. Is a surprise
but
to me.
That also maybe that does leave them open to some type of a legal challenge, because now it sounds like you're getting kids in the world of like
trading,
like trading and money, just handling actual money. Like, I don't know. That one's weird to me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, either way, I guess we'll see where this lawsuit goes.
I don't think we will.
I think that we probably won't actually get an update on it.
I feel like this was one of the ones that
disappear and go. But
I think they're better off appealing to Congress.
Hopefully, Tina can get what she wants out of this. As for my actual opinion on, like, you know, are these games addictive? Yeah, I think they are.
I think
the games are pretty addictive. Maybe that makes me like part of the problem, and that I don't feel that there's like really maybe broadly speaking, I am in favor of the idea of perhaps like cracking down on some predatory practices involving microtransactions, and you know, like, because I know how it gets. Like these games, they do a lot. There's a lot of little tricks to keep kids like kind of locked in and keep you spending money on like microtransactions. And so some of like reining some of that in probably is good. It seems like these people, though, that like you said, I'm not sure if they like entirely understand what's going on, but maybe
like,
they do.
I don't know if you can blame the companies necessarily for their games being addictive, since their job is to make a game that kids want to play as much as possible. And then like with things that are addictive, like do we like gambling, right? Gambling addiction is a real thing. We all know that it's true, but do we actually persecute casinos for gambling addiction? We know this, they have to like help people with gambling addiction and provide like phone lines and stuff. But is it the casino's fault you have a gambling addiction or your fault?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose maybe their argument is just that they're, like, enabling the addiction, or that they're doing things that further the addiction.
And that's where the parents should come in. Now I'm going too far with my opinion. But just saying, like...
No. I want to hear.
It just sounds like these lawyers, they just want to find a reason to get at that gaming money. Because at the end of the day, even if your kid is addicted to games, right? I mean, that's why you're a parent.
Yeah.
Now it's time for you to do your job.
Right. I'm a little mixed on it, but I don't see too much of an issue with Roblox, so I'll leave it there for now.
Ooh, play it for a week and then come back. That's what he's going to do next
podcast. Like the Yu-Gi-Oh world in Roblox?
There's some like Yu-Gi-Oh stuff in there.
I could be convinced.
Paul comes back. Yeah, guys, we got to get rid of this. Yeah, it's getting crazy.
Okay, well, that's pretty much it for my stories, so I suppose it is time to reach into the pot.
All right.
Answer some viewer questions.
Let's see what you guys have been saying in our Google form link below.
Yeah, you can always submit two some questions to the pot, so. Well, I guess you have you drew two cards instead of one.
I did draw two cards. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Let me draw mine.
All right. So, Paul.
Yeah. You was this not... directed to me?
No, but I'm asking. Okay. So do you think regular Yu-Gi-Oh! Should have maximum summons? Like, should we bring that type of... Woo! Fast, in a hurry.
Well, that's the question.
That's the question.
No.
Yeah, that's fair. No, well, I'd actually also say no.
Well, you can finish the question.
No, that's it, really.
Is there any more to it? No. Should regular... Yeah, I don't think we need it. Now, let me expound a little bit on what I mean by that. Because I know sometimes people want, like, a new summoning type, a new mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
I've been pretty staunchly against summoning mechanics for a good minute now. And by a good minute, I mean, like, the last... 6-7 years basically. I think we have enough summoning mechanics in Yu-Gi-Oh! I think that we have explored just about every new way you can think of to combine like two monsters into one, a new one or whatever.
I still don't think we needed pendulums and links.
And I think that pendulums and links actually cause a lot of harm to the general accessibility of Yu-Gi-Oh!
Mm-hmm.
This is not a mark against the mechanics as a player. I totally understand how pendulums work. I think Konami has kind of started just abusing pendulums to some degree, where they...
Redheaded stepchild.
They don't really make great support for them, or it's kind of awkward, or whatever, and you can say a lot about links. But the main thing is that when you hear a lot of people say, like, why they quit Yu-Gi-Oh! Or why they kind of don't want to get back into it or whatever, it tends to... Those tend to be these reasons that are the most cited, is like, I quit when they turn the monsters and spell cards together or whatever, or the monsters with the weird arrows. And if you play a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh!, you'll say things like, oh, they're easy to understand, like, it's not that bad. But to the average bystander kind of outside looking in, I think that those introduction of those mechanics has done feels like irreparable harm.
Yeah, I mean, it's a card game. We can't go back in time. Well, time was the format, but we can't go back in time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have links, we have pendulums. I think even Konami wishes they didn't exist. So let's not make it worse by adding another. Even if maximum summons and rush duels are cool, the Yu-Gi-Oh! Advanced format game does not need another summon.
Yeah, I don't think we can stuff much more. Now, I will say this about maximum summons. It would be cool to have the combined artwork thing.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Kind of the three cards that together make like a picture. Yu-Gi-Oh! Having continued art or full art or something like that. Totally in favor of that.
That's also in reference to Rush Duel's Overrush Rare, where the cards break out of their frames, and so then you can line them up. It's really cool.
I would totally love that, but I don't want
any more that's fair.
Complex summoning mechanics. I just don't think we need it. Speaking of that, though, I mean, have you enjoyed maximum summoning in Rush Duel?
Yeah, I think it's cool. I think it's fun.
Works well.
Okay. Now, if someone uses it on me and I have no answer to it, I hate it and I'm upset, but I guess that's Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah, we were actually talking to someone earlier who was sort of saying how, like, they'd seen maximum summoning and they felt a bit more turned off by it.
Because I think in his case, Duel Links is adding another thing.
Yeah, it's another thing.
If you play both sides of Duel Links, right, Speed Duel Links and Rush Duel Links, it can be kind of overwhelming just how many things can happen.
Yeah, this is one of our more, like, casual friends, but... Yeah, so it's like you can really see we're adding more and more and more and gumming up the game with just barriers to entry. I don't like it.
Lots of stuff.
All right, well, anyways, why doesn't Konami use the OG starter deck images of Dark Magician, Blue Eyes, and Red Eyes? It's from Basic Nerd.
Okay. I think that's just Konami's way of distancing themselves from the anime.
Yeah, it seems like so here's what I think it is.
Unless you look at these.
Yeah, there's a long period of time where they did not ever use those original starter deck mm-hmm. arts again. Like, they used them in, like, Starter Deck, Yugi, Kaiba, and Joey, and, like, a couple of the tins from, like, early 2003, 4, whatever. And they never, ever revisited those artworks until, like, maybe around 2017 or something for the first time is when they did it again. I don't know if there's like a solid concrete reason, so this is all just conjecture, but my thing is it's probably distancing itself a little from the anime, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And it does seem like there's like a almost like a TCG default version of Blue Eyes and stuff that they want to establish that isn't Seto Kaiba's Blue Eyes from Duel Monsters. It's just the Blue Eyes White Dragon, a Yu-Gi-Oh! TCG card.
I think the TCG standards are the Legacy of Blue Eyes versions of Dark Magician and Blue Eyes.
Legend of Blue Eyes?
Legend. What did I say?
Legacy.
Oh, my bad. Yeah, Legend of Blue Eyes.
They don't even use those arts anymore either.
Do they not come up anymore?
Yeah, have you seen the, it's like the LOB Blue Eyes White Dragon.
Broke Neck Dragon.
And Dark Magician with like just arms kind of folded and just standing there. They don't use those very much either. It's been a
while? Oh, okay.
The ones that they default to the most are Tablet Dark Magician and like Tablet/Planet Blue Eyes.
I like Planet Blue Eyes. Yeah. I don't like Tablet
TCG,
Blue
they
Eyes.
They love to use those things. Those are the ones that were initially in Master Duel, which is weird.
Mm.
And that's usually when they do reprints. That's just what they'll print.
So. Huh, that is weird.
I don't have a great reason for it. This just seems like they kind of want to distance themselves from those anime ones.
It might be an ownership thing. Yu-Gi-Oh! Is owned by quite a few different entities.
Yeah.
All right, so my next question is, opinion on max rarity decks. Do they promote unhealthy spending? This is also from Basic Nerd.
Oh, geez, Basic Nerd. You're getting all your questions in today, huh? Okay. Max rarity decks, do they promote
unhealthy spending?
Hmm.
So, I'll give my opinion on max rarity decks. I think they're cool when you really love a particular strategy and you know that even when it's no longer relevant in the metagame, you're just going to always want to have this deck. Then I think having the option to get it in maximum rarity is really cool. It can just a way to show your devotion and love of the deck because you have to put a little financial investment behind it.
Yeah, it cements your love of the deck.
What about your opinion?
Oh, I thought you had more to it.
No, I was giving my opinion. That was a
small
opinion.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I've been starting to do some max rarity versions of a few decks. I'm like currently working on Vanquisol, like kind of getting all the collector's rares and stuff like that. The ultimate Rock of the Vanquisher, the QCR Xiaolong. I'm also doing the same for Exo Sisters and Rescue Ace and stuff. And these are decks that I really, really like that have like, you know, they're near and dear to my heart, you could say. The thing is, though, I think that going max rarity is a choice that you make, and it's a pretty, like, rational one. Like, there are no pressures to ever max rarity out a deck. Like, unless you yourself just have the shiny cardboard itch. The cards are functionally the same,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think that there's really any problem with doing it.
I mean,
because you would have to have made that choice. Like, you know what I mean?
Right. But I think what maybe Basic Nerd might be hinting at is, if you follow like Yu-Gi-Oh! On social media and a lot of these YouTubers, you know, a lot of like top players and, you know, they love showing off their max rarity decks. It's a bit of a stunt, you know, money is not an object for those guys. And so I guess envy,
FOMO,
fear of missing out. You see all these people with their max rarity decks and maybe makes it feels like, am I really a, let's say, a Vanquished Soul player if I don't have a maximum rarity deck? Like, if you buy into a lot of what people put on online, I'll tell you this right now, guys, a lot of people with max rarity decks, they don't own those cards.
Yeah, sometimes people are just borrowing stuff.
Borrowing and gifts, like, there are people who do buy their max rarity cards, but a lot of people who do it regularly and stunt online with them, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that max rarity promotes bad spending. I think maybe like watching too much Team Samurai X1 maybe it does. He uses max. I watched a Team Sam video actually the other day. It was like a Dark Magician one or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he just casually threw out like, yeah, you just run two Dark Magicians, like two DDS ones.
Yep.
Pulls out two Dark Duel Stories, Dark Magicians. That thing's worth like $2,000. And he's just like, yeah, you know, you just run two of that. So I mean, I guess if you watch too much Team Sam, maybe you'll...
Like, I would hope people don't try and emulate Sam just because he is a unique individual who's a little out there.
Yeah, the flexing is a brand for him.
Like,
but I will say this. I think that most people aren't trying to do that just because they saw his videos. I would hope.
I would hope. But maybe I haven't watched enough Sam to, like, to like get the like brainwashing where it's like, I gotta max out my blue eyes deck. It's like, Alec, you don't play blue eyes. I gotta max it out though.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think that maxing out a deck is a bad thing. I don't think it promotes bad spending. I think you have to just take a look in the mirror if you are.
In a weird way, it might promote habits. Like good spending habits because depending on the deck, those cards can be very expensive. You got to save some money. You got to like really ration out your bank account.
Yeah. Okay. Well, my last question is, oh, this is a fun one. Will Snake Eye get hit on the next ban list?
Oh,
very
okay.
Plain and basic. So Snake Eye, you know, being the current sort of top tier, arguably tier zero TCG deck, it seems like a ban list is probably going to be coming out this kind of maybe later this month or something.
It would be wild if they didn't get some type of attention from the next ban list.
Oh, they'll have to get something. The big question is it a slap on the wrist or is it kind of a neutering? And I think that it would be crazy to expect a neutering this early. Like Snake Eye Poplar came out like last month. And stuff. So they still want you to be playing Bonfire, Poplar, Diabell Star, all that stuff. You know, Snake Eyes. So I think that we can expect a slap on the wrist before, like, the summer. And then maybe after summer ends and kind of Nat season is over, that's when the really, really, like, okay, no more of this deck thing happens. So what's getting hit?
The weird thing about that deck is there's so many... Depending on how severe you want to get with hitting that deck, there are so many targets.
There's a lot of targets. It's a deck that it works like how a lot of top tier decks kind of have worked in the past. One card leads to another card leads to another card leads to another play. And like it's, you know, you can use Wanted and search for Diabell Star and she can get Original Sinful Spoils and you can use that to get Ash, which gets Poplar, which then summons itself, which gets the next thing. And it's just kind of like you can hit a few different legs of that, you know, monster, so to speak. I don't know which ones are right. I think if it was me and I just wanted something that was like a quick and dirty hit, it'd probably just be like limiting Ash and like maybe eventually I think that Promethean Princess is going to get banned. I don't think this is happening like next month. I think that
she's got a future ban card written all over.
She has heavy like ban card energy though. I think like I'd be surprised to see her make it through the year.
Now, we're not telling you guys, oh, sell your Promethean Princesses now. We don't know this for a fact.
I'm answering a question that somebody submitted in the pot of greed.
Right. Like, we're not trying to influence the market.
Yeah, I have
that's
no.
That's not the move we're making.
I have nothing against Snake Eye or for Snake Eye. I've got no skin in the game.
I actually like Snake Eye. In a perfect world, they wouldn't hit anything, but I know that's not going to be the case.
Yeah, I think that like the Snake Eye Ash is probably the easy hit. Mm-hmm. There's a few things like you can limit Flamberg Dragon or something like that. That could have an effect. I've heard some people talking about Link Karibo. I hope that doesn't have to happen because like I feel like Link Karibo doesn't deserve that, but it is more of that like whole Link ones are a tricky proposition.
And then with the way they use their Link ones, you hit one Link one, they use a different Link one.
Yeah, they still use like Relinquish Anima, and so it's the Diabell Star thing. She's a lore monster, so I feel that she's
I feel like she's safe.
She's safe.
Wanted, though.
Wanted, yeah. I could see Wanted, perhaps, going to, like, one
It gives
something.
Me...
It's Nadir Servant
Sky energy.
Engage. That's that kind of a card, so...
To an extent, even Original Sinful Spoils, it's a similar type of card. I could see that going to one, too.
And then there's even the question of, like, Bonfire, where Bonfire functions like Roto, which is a card that is limited. But then on the other hand, Bonfire does have a hard once per turn. And has significantly fewer targets. It just so happens that its targets currently are the best cards.
Right.
So do you limit Bonfire? Probably not, I would think. I don't think that that's like a thing, but...
Maybe if we're thinking long term, maybe if not this list, I could see both Ash and Bonfire going to one in the space of a year.
Because it takes so much to like really grind down the Snake Eye consistency.
Yeah.
Like, Ash searches Poplar, but then there's like three different ways to like get to Ash. Because it's like Wanted gets to Diabell Star, gets to sent to Original Sinful Spoils, which gets to Ash. And so it's like, man, I don't know what you do.
I think at the end of the day, I think we might see all three of those cards limited one day. And then something's going to be banned. Probably Princess.
I think Princess is getting banned at some point in the future.
Like, I think as far as this upcoming ban list, though, we'll probably see a limit or two.
I think a limit or two. I think slap on the wrist.
I don't know if you can semi-limit anything in that deck. It'll make a difference.
Yeah, I think you gotta go for some limits, because semi-limits isn't going to do anything. Anyways, that's it for the questions for
those
the
are cards.
Hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode of the Pot of Greed. Not as much Yu-Gi-Oh news this week, it feels.
But we still managed to talk a bit about Yu-Gi-Oh. So good for us. Good for us.
Cool. Well, anyways, hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Make sure that you drop a like on the video if you're watching, or give us 5 stars if you're listening.
And shout out to the Premier Gang.
Yeah, it's been fun. We'll see you guys in the next one.
Pass turn.